You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to Warriors Off Court, the San Francisco Chronicles NBA podcast. I'm your host, Connor Letourneau, and today I'm joined by Wes Goldberg, host of the popular Locked On Warriors podcast. During our conversation, we looked at which players have the most to prove ahead of next season's training camp. Wes, thank you so much for joining me back on the podcast. How's Florida treating you? I know you're still out there in the Miami area. How you been?
Hot. But, you know, it's been good. Been spending a lot of time at the pool, sort of developing a drinking problem. But what's the big deal? It's quarantine. Nobody cares.
It's quarantine, man. I mean, as long as you get the work done, as long as you're responsible, right. You have been doing your work. I've been impressed. You've been writing some good stuff. It's been nice for both of us because there's been stuff to write about. We're not just having to sit back and make things up. There's been content that's been readily available with Minicamp officially. Today is Tuesday. Minicamp officially ended today. It was kind of an interesting thing. Obviously, the Warriors have never had an offseason minicamp because they haven't really needed one. But given the long hiatus, the NBA let them have it. And Steph and Draymond weren't there. So I think that limited how much they could accomplish. But it felt like, given the fact that those two weren't there, they got as much out of it as they could. What was your big takeaway from it?
Similar. I think you know what Steph and Draymond are going to give you, right? Like, Steph Curry is going to stretch the floor in ways that nobody else can, sure. Draymond Green is going to give you this playmaking ability from the 4 and 5 spot that very few players in the league can provide. But Steve Kerr and the coaching staff in that front office are very aware and familiar with what those guys can do. So I think it's easy to project their abilities based on what they saw in these scrimmages and these practices and whatever individual drills and various drills that they went through. It's really just about finding guys who complement Steph, Draymond, and Klay Thompson. And everything that we heard is that Klay Thompson is looking good and he's on track to be 100% by next season. So given that this trio then is going to be back in place where it wasn't last year, it's just about finding what all, you know, players who complement that core. And it sounds like this mini camp was a step in the right direction as far as seeing what Andrew Wiggins looks like, seeing what some of these younger players look like, and how they sort of factor in to next season's team that hopes to get back into the playoffs.
Yeah, so the big thing I wanted to talk about today is this is a really interesting time for these guys, right? Because we're in the middle of this extended hiatus. It's looking like next season's not going to start till January or February, which when you go back all the way to mid-March when the Warriors season officially ended, that's going to end up being, you know, a 10-11th month break. And I think that's from a management perspective, that can tell you a lot about what these guys are made of. Do they make the most of their off time? Do they stay in shape? Do they get better on their own? Are they coming into the facility to get working with the coaches, or are they just treating it like one big vacation and drinking a lot and gaining weight and that sort of thing? And I think that really matters, right? From the front office's perspective, when roster spots and rotation spots are on the line. And so, you know, they got a little snapshot at minicamp of where these guys are at right now, but now it's looking like these guys are going to have another few months before training camp. And so can these guys, the guys specifically that are either fighting for a roster spot or trying to improve their position in the rotation, can they make enough strides to show up at training camp and really open some eyes? So I wanted to talk to you about who you think has the most on the line over the next few months and what you think they can do to better their position come first day of training camp?
The guy that comes to mind for me is Eric Paschal. Just given with what's at stake for him, is he going to be a guy who ends up being first team all rookie, you know, in his first NBA season, but for a bad Warriors team that just sort of needed somebody to score, and kind of never builds off of a strong rookie year and just sort of ends up being like this empty stats guy, or, you know, taking advantage of the situation type guy, never really getting back to those heights again in his career? Or does he build on that year by becoming a core rotation player for this Warriors team? And as impressed as I was, and many people were, with Eric Paschal as his rookie season, there are things in his game that concern me. He seems to be he's a little bit of a black hole on offense. He's not a great playmaker. We saw the Warriors nudging him into more playmaking duties toward the end of the year because they recognized that too, that in order to sort of coexist with Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green, he's going to need to learn to pass the ball. He's not going to get to dribble 3, 4, 5 times a possession, right? He needs to make one dribble, one hard dribble, decide to either shoot it or pass to Steph or Klay, you know, coming off of screens and stuff like that. So he needs to get better, but also he needs to become a better three-point shooter. And so there's like all these things. Wait, what was he, a 28% three-point shooter last year? They need to get him. He needs to be much better than that next year. So again, as impressive as he was, there were so many little things about his game and big things about his game that he needs to improve in order to be a part of a meaningful rotation for a team that aims to get back into the playoffs next year. And if he can do that, well, then you're talking about one of the best 5 players on the roster and somebody who ought to be on the floor at the end of important basketball games. If he can't do that, well, then you're looking at somebody who might be the 9th guy on the roster and is more like Nick Young than Andre Iguodala. You know what I mean? Right. Where if you just need somebody to get a bucket, you'll put him in. But he's not really a guy. You know, he may anchor a second unit or something, but he's really not a part of that core group going forward. So I think Paschal, between now and next season, has a lot on the line. And when you consider that he didn't really participate in minicamp, right?
Because he was
strange. He was a late entry. He quarantined for an extra day. His, you know, every time we talked to Steve Kerr about him, he was just, well, his conditioning isn't in place. It's a little weird. It was a little strange. I try not to read too much into it. Mm-hmm. But what it does mean is that these next few weeks of individual one-on-one stuff at Chase Center that he's going to be able to do outside of this mini camp is going to be that much more important.
Yeah, I think I'm glad that you brought up Eric to start, because I think a lot of Warriors fans have lofty expectations for his career because he was such a surprise as a rookie, and he came in as the 41st pick and was a first team all rookie guy, and was arguably their best player this season when you take everything into account. But I'm just not sure about what his ceiling is, A, in general, and B, on this team, because when you have everyone back, I don't really know what his role exactly is. I don't know if he can get points in the flow of the offense as much as he should. He's more of a one-on-one ISO guy, which isn't really going to be how they're going to want to play when Steph and Klay are in the fold. And he also has been most successful at power forward, and he's not going to be able to get a ton of 4 minutes when you have small ball lineups with Wiggins playing 4, and then you also have obviously Draymond at the 4. Can he coexist with Draymond? That has yet to be proven. So there's a lot of question marks about him, and I do think it's possible that he's a guy who peaks early, you know, who doesn't have another season like that. You know, I don't want to compare him to Michael Carter Williams, but that's the most obvious example I can think of in recent history of someone who came out as a rookie and benefited from a situation, and with that bad 76ers team, got a ton of minutes and was able to put up numbers and was rookie of the year that year. And then he's just completely fallen off since then as a total non-factor. I'm not saying he's going to be like that, but I do think he could end up being at best a, I mean, I think it's very realistic that he could end up being like the eighth, ninth man on a good team rather than, you know, a potential all-star, which given the start of his career, a lot of people would assume he's on that track.
Right. But then if you think about him being the 41st pick in the draft, if he's your ninth guy on the roster, if he's your 12th guy on the roster, I mean, hell, that's a win for a second round pick in the NBA draft. And so I think it's important to keep that in mind.
Talking to people in the organization, and I know you've probably noticed this too, they don't talk about him like he's a future all-star. No one thinks that. No. I think I talked to some guys in the front office a while ago, and they said basically that they looked at him as a guy who can be a fill-in starter and can help you off the bench. And that's that, like you said, that's a win at 41. But that's really how they look at him. And if they look at him like that, I don't think we should look at him as anything more than that.
Right. I mean, let's not act like it was some sort of travesty that he fell to the second round, right? The idea with him is that there is a limited ceiling based on he's a good athlete, but he's not this crazy jump out of the gym athlete, right? Mm-hmm. You know, he is late. He's already 23 years old, which is, you know, the same age as D'Angelo Russell. It's the same age as Marquese Chris, who's been in the league seemingly forever, right?
Right.
So, I do like if this is what he is, then that's still okay with a second round pick. Like if he is just this for the rest of his career and he's not going to get the points per game because he's not going to have the opportunity that he had this last year. But if he is just this in smaller doses for the rest of his career, still win with the second round pick. Right. But there's also like, I do think that there's other, like just because it was a second round pick doesn't mean that he's supposed to just be this for the rest of his career. Nikola Jokic was the 41st pick in the draft. Now, I'm not saying Pascal is going to be as good a player as Jokic, but it's not to say that there's not a ceiling that there's not a higher ceiling than maybe originally thought with him. I think he could end up being maybe the heir apparent to Draymond Green. Like, I think there is a world in which that happens. Like, he is so strong. Like, he's probably one of the strongest guys in the league. He is a good athlete. He does have north-south speed. That is really important. He's probably faster than Draymond Green ever was. And he does have an ability and an aggressiveness to put the ball on the floor and just go get buckets. And even if that three-point shot never does come around, he has a tendency to draw fouls and pick up, you know, 3 points the old-fashioned way, so to speak. So I think that he is going to be a good player. It's just whether or not he can exist with, like, within that Warriors type of framework that they have. They guaranteed his contract. They're going to have him under team control for many years here. And so they can afford to be patient with him, right? Even if he is your eighth or ninth guy, they're going to be able to afford to be patient with him, especially as Draymond, you know, ages to 30, 31, 32, 33. If Pascal comes along, maybe he could be the next Draymond Green and just take his place as opposed to being redundant with him. Or if that three-point shot does come along, I think there's a world where Eric Pascal can play the three for you. And in small ball lineups, if it's Pascal and Wiggins, now you just have switchable combo forwards. Like, that could work. So there's still a world in which Pascal can be a core part of this team going forward. Maybe not an all-star level player, but at least, you know, that fifth or sixth man in a playoff rotation. And that's why I say he's got so much at stake, because this is, you know, we always talk about Pascal as sort of this high floor guy. I think that's still the case, but as far as his outcome with the Warriors, I think there's a pretty large variance.
We'll have more of my conversation with Wes Goldberg right after the break.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey, listeners. We recorded this before news broke Wednesday morning that Jonathan Simmons is signing with a team in China. Though he can opt out of his contract when an NBA team offers him a guaranteed deal, that seems unlikely. To make the 15-man roster for the Warriors or any other NBA franchise, he would have had to impress in training camp. Simmons will probably try to return to the NBA once the Chinese Basketball Association season ends in March, but the Warriors are proceeding as if he won't be in their future plans. Because of that, let's skip ahead.
Can I throw another name at you?
Yeah.
Are we sure Alan Smalagich is part of this team next year? Because I would throw him into one of those fringe players too. Now, I know he's harder to get off of. When you talk about Bowman, Mulder, and Toscano Anderson, those are non-guaranteed contracts. Yeah. But there's ways to, like, the Warriors have 2 second-round picks in this coming draft. They're probably not going to be able to keep both of them, if any of them, on the roster. I think there's a better chance of them selling one of those picks or doing a draft and stash type deal where that player doesn't count toward the 15-man roster. But they could also use that pick to try to sweeten a deal to get off of Smalagich. Like, as fun as that story was last year and as much upside as he may have, I don't know that you can afford to, you know, waste a 15-man roster spot on a player who even the Warriors would tell you is probably 3 years away from being a legit NBA player.
Right.
Like, you could clear a roster spot by moving off of Smalagich and keeping Simmons and Mulder or something like that.
Yeah, there's no doubt in my mind that Smalagich is the worst player on this team. Everyone I've talked to has told me that they're giving him another year without a shadow of a doubt. They're giving him another year. They have decided that. Now, when push comes to shove and they're at training camp and they look at the numbers and they there's not a spot for someone like Simmons, and they want Simmons on the team, who knows? Maybe they change their mind. Maybe they revert, right. They change course. But I still think they're going to keep Smiley. I don't think, even though it's a small contract, I don't think they want to eat any money given where they are financially, given the repercussions from COVID. So I think he's going to be around. And I honestly think he should be. I think he deserves that opportunity. When you drafted him early second round, you knew that he was a complete project. And so if you bail on him now, it's not really fair to him when you knew he wasn't ready at all to play NBA minutes. I mean, it's not like he did anything last season that should have been surprising to you. I think he deserves another year. Now, if he doesn't make significant progress this season and isn't dominant in his G League minutes, you cut bait. You move on.
Yes, they drafted Smalagich with the intention of giving him a few years to develop. He's a project, right? That was before they, quote-unquote, discovered Kai Bowman, quote-unquote, discovered Michael Mulder. Do they look at those guys as having more upside, specifically, I think, in the case of Mulder, as having more upside than Smalagich, I think is a fair question. That said, it's a lot easier to just convert guys like that to two-way contracts.
I kind of expect someone like Mulder to get a two-way contract.
Me too.
And it's yeah, a lot of teams like to use those two-way contracts on younger guys. I think Mulder's now 27, right? Something like that. And so he'd be kind of old for that, but I don't think the Warriors necessarily look at it as two ways, as like a spot where you have to develop guys. I think they look at it as just like an extra resource to get some helpful minutes in the regular season. I mean, that's how they viewed it with Damian Lee, and obviously it paid off.
I could see Michael Mulder being the next Damian Lee, because you don't really, if you're going to be developing the second pick in the draft, if you're going to be developing Smalagich, then yeah, you probably do need those two-way players to just fill spot minutes for you. And if Mulder on a two-way contract, that makes a lot of sense to me, because you would presume that he's behind Damian Lee, behind Jordan Poole, behind whoever else they get this offseason. Like, just the chances of him playing regular minutes are pretty slim, so it makes a lot of sense to keep him on a two-way contract where you're sort of capped out anyway on the games and the minutes that you can play.
Yeah. You bring up another one that I think is interesting. It's one that we haven't talked a lot about in the past, and that's Damian Lee. Damian Lee is a guy who has been a feel-good story. He went from having to be a two-way contract for 2 years in a row, even to get to that point, he went undrafted, bounced around the G League. I mean, he's got a nice narrative. And I think he's had to deal with the assumption from a lot of fans that he's only around because he's Steph's brother-in-law. But I think he proved enough last season to show he's a legitimate NBA player, and he can warrant legitimate rotation minutes. Now, I still have questions over whether or not he is a legitimate bona fide rotation player for a good NBA team. And I wonder if he really deserves a spot in the Warriors' long-term plans. I'm curious what your thoughts are on that.
I like Damian Lee as far as a rotation guy. Maybe he's not your sixth man. Maybe he's not even really your seventh man.
Oh, he definitely can be. I don't think he should be in the top eight.
I think it's fair to set, to put him in your eighth or ninth slot in the rotation. I still think the Warriors are going to go deeper in the regular season and in the postseason than they typically have. But I could see Damian Lee doing that. Look, you know what you're getting with him, and I think that has a lot of value. Like, he's not going to surprise you, right? Like, Damian Lee's not going to go off for 30 points, but he's going to hit open jumpers. He's going to move the ball. Like, he's not going to, in the, you know, where we're talking about Eric Paschal sometimes can get a little too ball dominant. Like, Damian Lee's not going to do that. He's just going to, he's going to hit open jumpers. He's going to attack closeouts. He's going to try hard on defense. He's going to rebound better than you probably think he's going to. And that's it. And I think a player like that in a postseason setting specifically has a lot of value. And those are the sorts of players that tend to garner a lot of trust from coaches. And I think a little bit more higher on Damian Lee than you are, especially if you're talking about.
I really like Damian Lee, and like personally, and I think, and if he's listening to this, I hope he doesn't take it personally, and I hope he uses that as motivation because he's always been good at that. I just think that he's good at a lot of things, but I'm not sure he's like elite at anything. To be like a guy who can be in the top eight rotation for a contending team, which the Warriors are trying to be, I think you need that elite skill that you're hanging your hat on.
I guess that's where we differ. I also look at what the Raptors did to the Warriors. Look at what teams right now, like the Lakers and the Heat, are doing. These teams that got to the finals, they do have got, like, Miami has like their Duncan Robinson, right, who's elite as a 3-point shooter. But they also have just dudes like Jay Crowder, right? They just have like kind of guys who aren't really elite at anything, but don't really take anything off the table. Like, you're not going to attack Damian Lee, you know? You're not going to try to take advantage of anything. And I think that has a lot of value too, where he doesn't need to win you a game, but he's not going to lose you a game either, right? Like, LeBron James isn't going to be able to attack Damian Lee over and over again in pick and roll. Like, he's not that bad defensively. He's not that undersized defensively. Like, I think Damian Lee is actually pretty good when it comes to knowing where to be, and he's got decent enough size. So, I think a guy like that does have value, even in the playoffs. Like, let's remember, like, we kind of tend to think of the regular season as this marathon and the playoffs as the sprint. The playoffs are as much a marathon as the regular season, right? Because, I mean, the playoffs go 2-3 months,
and the
stakes are so much higher, and your starters are playing so much more minutes. So, like, if you can bank some minutes from your starters through those first couple of rounds, and you're not beat up by the finals, that's hugely important. I think Damian Lee is veteran enough, savvy enough, smart enough, and trustworthy enough where he can absorb a lot of those minutes in the beginning rounds.
So, lightning round, name two more players and give a quick elevator pitch on why they have a lot to prove.
Ooh, Marquese Chris, even though he emerged as Golden State's starting center last year, what is it, right? Do you hit that, you know, number eight overall pick type ceiling? Probably not, but can you get close? Can you be the starting center of the future for the Warriors? Because over the last few years, it's been very sort of plug and play, been very, hey, we'll sign this guy, he'll go, we'll sign a new guy. And it's been like this revolving door of centers. Marquese Chris, at 23 years old, with a very team favorable contract, has an opportunity here to make the most of this and become, you know, a long-term piece in the Warriors' center rotation. He may not be the starter forever, but he can at least be there the same way that Kevon Looney was there. And so that's one of the players. And the other player, honestly, is Kevon Looney. If he could just stay healthy between minicamp and training camp and all this stuff, like, it's not so much if he could stay healthy, but if he does get injured, that's going to mean at any point during this process, the Warriors are going to have to seriously consider, like, kind of reevaluating where it is Kevon Looney stands in that organization, and if he indeed is a foundational piece to that team. Because if he gets hurt one more time, I would have my doubts. I have my doubts now, and I think they should too. So it's the two centers that I look at.
Yeah, you stole one of my guys. I think I'm glad one of us mentioned Kevon, because we'd be remiss not to. He has so much on the line. I think his career is really at a crossroads. I don't think that's an overstatement. The guy I want to bring up is Jordan Poole. He's a guy who got a lot of praise during minicamp from both teammates and Coach Kerr. It sounds like he's been living in the gym, taking his offseason really seriously. And this is a critical time in any young player's development, that offseason between rookie year and sophomore year. And his rookie year was fascinating. I mean, he looked completely overwhelmed the vast majority of it. And then the last month or two of the Warriors regular season, he kind of started to see things more clearly. He simplified his movements. He started to make sounder decisions. He started to be allowed to have the ball in his hands a little bit more, which allowed him to show off his playmaking, which is something he wasn't able to show at Michigan. And so I think he showed enough down the stretch of the season to give to make people believe that he can be a legitimate player in this league. But it is going to be an uphill battle, I think, in terms of getting meaningful minutes next season, or at least close to the amount of minutes he was getting last season, just because there's going to be more good players on the floor. You're going to have Steph back. You're going to have Clay back. They're going to add guys in free agency. There's going to be a lottery pick in the fold. There's going to be someone from the traded player exception. So, you know, with all those guys in the fold, I think he needs to really make a major improvement to warrant a spot in that rotation. And I think he's capable of it. It sounds like he's done everything this offseason for them to believe in him. But we're not really going to know until he shows up and really opens some more eyes at training camp. And then the other guy that I
Jordan Poole, though? You know how you have, like, you have captains of player trains? I think I'm, like, the lifeguard of the Jordan Poole, you know? Mm-hmm. And I have been so high on Jordan Poole since the Warriors drafted him. And even, like, despite the struggles, I actually really think he's a high-level playmaker. I think his future in the league is not at shooting guard or even really in an off-ball position, but really at an on-ball position and a point guard role who can stretch the floor for you a little bit. And could be a combo guard for you. And, you know, you look at combo guards in this league right now, you know, guys like Jamal Murray and Tyler Hero. I think Jordan Poole could be a similar type of player, not to that level. I don't think he'll ever hit that type of level, but just as far as filling a role, I think he can play that sort of role. I like that you bring him up. If he takes a substantial leap between years one and two, there's an opportunity for him to basically earn the job of Steph Curry's backup, at least in the regular season, where he's allowing Steph to go from 35 minutes per game to 30 minutes per game, because you trust that the offense is going to function when the ball is in Jordan Poole's hands, or at least when Jordan Poole is on the floor, even if you have other secondary ball handlers around him and doing stuff like that. So, you know, even with the 28th pick in the draft, I'll say what I said about Pascal. You're really not expecting much, even from a late first round pick. But I remain high on Jordan Poole, and I think that he's got a future in the NBA. And I actually think if it pans out, he's got a future with the Warriors too. It's a 4-year contract, right? Like he's under team control for basically 4 years. There's an opportunity for him to really carve out a meaningful role in this sort of next rendition of the Warriors.
Guys like him matter a lot going forward, just because they have such cheap contracts, and the Warriors are going to be facing such a massive luxury tax bill, that you need meaningful contributions from those bargain contracts. I'll give him this. He's way better than Jacob Evans, and Jacob Evans was drafted in the same spot a year before him.
You say that like it was some sort of compliment. I don't think, and I know you meant it as that, but
I mean, okay. No, I say that because that's where the expectation needs to be. Like there's not a lot of talent comes from late first round. There's actually historically more talent from the early second round than the late first. You look at the number 28 spot, the only great player in modern NBA history has come out of there is Tony Parker. Outside of that, the best players you're talking about are like Wayne Ellington. So you got to keep it in perspective. the other guy I want to get to real quick is Draymond Green. He's the one big name guy we're talking about. I don't know about you, Wes, but I have gotten more hate in my email box and Twitter mentions about Draymond Green in the past few months than anyone else on the team. It seems like a lot of Warriors fans are just completely forgetting everything he's meant to this team, and they're tired of him. They want to get rid of him. They were super down on his season this past season. I think they're putting too much stock in his numbers. I don't think you can really judge him off his numbers this past season. You know, when he was surrounded by a bunch of kind of young guys and guys from the G League and what have you, he needs Steph and Clay around, and he needs Stakes to really show what he can do. So it'll be really interesting to see how he comes to training camp. Is he in good shape? He wasn't at mini camp. Is he locked in and ready to once again, for like the umpteenth time, to silence all his doubters? Cause I think a lot of people are dismissing him. They think he's done. They think he's washed up. I mean, he's 30 now, and this is a guy who plays bigger than his physical dimensions, and those guys tend to nosedive in production in the early 30s. So I do think it's a legitimate concern. He's dealt with nagging injuries for the past couple of years. I'm not going to say his career's at a total crossroads, but I do think he has a lot to prove next season.
I think that's fair, and especially when you consider what the Western Conference is going to look like when the Warriors are really a part of it, which they just weren't this last year. Anthony Davis is an actual factor, right? He's not on this maybe make a playoff team type of Pelicans team anymore. Like Anthony Davis, the road to the finals goes to the Lakers in the Western Conference, and Anthony Davis is maybe their best player. Nikola Jokic is one of the best five or six players in the league right now. Like when you look at the kind of guys that Draymond Green has to contend with, and the reason I bring up centers is because I do think that Draymond's future is going to be at center, because I think that 1 year where he was shooting from 3-point range well is admiration and not the rule. And if that's the case, even if he's not your starting center, if he's just playing your most important minutes at center, then he's a freaking center. Just like Anthony Davis doesn't play most of his minutes at center, doesn't start games at center, but when the games really matter, he plays center. So he's their center. Draymond Green's going to be in the same situation. The competition now is going to be much stiffer than it was even when Draymond was at his best, at least in the Western Conference. But even if you look at who he could play in the Eastern Conference, should the Warriors make the finals? I mean, you're looking at guys like Bam Adebayo and Joel Embiid, and we have seen playmaking centers have become so important in today's game. And Draymond Green really helped start all of that with what he was able to do with the two-man game with Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, all these guys, that it makes a lot of sense for him to be a big factor in what the Warriors want to do going forward. But you're right. He needs to show that that this year, even though he wasn't injured and didn't get this as much quote-unquote rest as guys like Klay and Steph did, that he can at least have taken advantage of maybe an off year where he wasn't, pedal to the metal the entire time, and which is one of the reasons why some fans are disappointed in him. But like you said so astutely, he needs Stakes, and he needs to be surrounded by all-star talent to make him better. I mean, that's always what we talk about with Draymond, right? Is he's at his best by bringing out other all-star talent. So, color me shocked to think that he wasn't playing that well when he wasn't surrounded by all-star talent. But once he's back around that talent, I expect a bounce back year from him. But there is reason to be concerned about wear and tear. That's fair.
Yeah. Wes, thank you so much for coming on the pod. You're actually coming back to the Bay next week. Maybe we can do one of these in person. That'd be fun.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah.
We'll leave it with that cliffhanger. Our thanks to Wes Goldberg for joining me on the podcast. Always enjoy having him on. Warriors Off Court is a production of the San Francisco Chronicle. Support Warriors Off Court and the newsroom that creates it by signing up for a Chronicle membership at sfchronicle.com/pod.